coming from the Springboks and Konya over the top it goes. Creel kicks ahead.
Welcome to SA Rugby Podcast.
Knocked on into the zone, man.
Hi everyone, and we're here with Mark Keohane. Mark, what a weekend of rugby.
Wonderful weekend. The one game that I thought was a gimme was the only one that came down to the wire. I believe you didn't watch the last 20 minutes. What was the text you sent me? Better team won, I'm gutted. I said, your team won, I know.
I think I sent that to you at 50 minutes. I think after the 48th, 49th minute, I was just taking the wife to church and ex-wife and dropped them off and was in the parking lot watching the game. I couldn't go in and I think praying for a Welsh victory is a bit selfish. I think that, well, we're down by nine. They've just given up another penalty 5 meters out. I just couldn't take it anymore. Not that I would give up. I was too stressful. And you text me and said, any chance of Wales coming back? My answer was nope. Better team's going to win. And for all intents and purposes, I thought that was what was going to happen.
And I think Warren Gatland said it afterwards as well. He said, we'll take the semi-final, but we shouldn't have been there on that performance. But again, we spoke about red cards or yellow cards being influential in these playoff games. My thing about a red or yellow was more down to interpretation, but that was just absolute madness from the French lock. The elbow to the face. It was 19-10 up on the attack, got all the momentum in a game, wow. And Wales doubting themselves for the first time in a long time. French believing in themselves. It's just, I think the French coaching staff must, but that is the French for you. That moment of genius, a moment of brilliance, and that
absolute madness.
That implosion that comes in big games. And best result, though, for the tournament. Best four teams definitely in the semi-finals. You've got Wales, South Africa. Fantastic matchup in the recent history. Three Welsh wins out of four against South Africa. And England, New Zealand, the last time they played, 16-15 at Twickenham, only 1 point in it. To me, both of them, the form teams at this World Cup on the one side. Wales have been up and down. The box a bit down against New Zealand, but have come back well. So, hugely exciting next weekend.
Yes, I mean, look at Wales, South Africa. My investment in SA Rugby magazine, been here 23 years, but grew up in Wales. So, people say, who are you going to support? I say, I can't really lose and I can't win on Sunday. For me, watching, the French were matched up physically. We were off the pace. We didn't front up in the physical challenge. We didn't tackle well. We missed tackles, and the French created those missed tackles, and that moment of madness. But then again, the French, Zinedine Zidane in the World Cup, with that headbutt. I mean, they're the only country I know of, and I sit to be corrected, that have the crime of passion as a defense.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something in their culture. That they're a passionate bunch.
No, they are a passionate bunch, and I think that's why they're such a difficult bunch to coach.
Yeah.
Because they don't even know what arrives, let alone the coaching staff.
Yeah.
But I'd felt that the Saturday games were going to be the tighter games and that the Sunday games would be the runaway games. And it was a complete role reversal. You had Australia that came out for 20 minutes and tried to play entertaining rugger, but very, very stupid playoff rugger.
Yeah.
And Michael Shaker saying afterwards he'd rather lose playing their way than win playing England's way. I mean, my goodness.
I don't know if he actually used England, but the reference was certainly there.
Yeah, I think from an Australian perspective, he's been a big letdown, and they can only be better with a new coaching staff coming in. But they were never in that game. Kudos to England. I thought they were outstanding. Their discipline, their game management.
Especially at that one time in the game where they were, I think Australia just scored and they were on their own the try line defending. I thought their discipline was incredible. They could have easily given away a penalty or a yellow card there, and they didn't. They defended well. And their discipline was incredible.
And they say the very good teams can win ugly, and when a team shouldn't be close to them, and scores, as happened in that when Australia brought it back to 17-16 just after halftime.
Yeah.
They went back and scored straight away. And it's like they just went up a gear to get that two-score differential out of the way again. And I just thought they really put down a statement. And I thought New Zealand also put down a statement because People say Ireland were woeful. You could say the same for Australia. And you look at their results in the last 2 or 3 years. But I felt there was, for the first time, there was a lot of doubt within the New Zealand community based on the 2 Irish wins out of 3. And it's the kind of thing you always hear when the Springboks play against the All Blacks. That's a team that can beat them.
Yes.
And I felt that that first 15 minutes, they played such complete rugger. And then a moment of just desperation on defense from Richie Mohanga when Sexton kicked that ball to touch 10-0 down. 12 minutes into the game, would have given them a 5-meter lineup. Potentially they could have scored, leapt in the air, kept it in play, and they attacked from that. You just felt that when I looked at that England game and I looked at the All Black game, both victors had the desperation as well. They were fighting for every ball on the ground. Mm. Even when they were up by 20 points, they were fighting to not concede a try, to kind of keep the possession. And I thought they put down 2 wonderful statements, which is going to make an epic semi-final worthy of any World Cup final.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more on most of what you said about the New Zealand England, but I felt that the score flattered England a little bit. It seemed a little bit closer than that. 2 intercept tries. Australia weren't a good team at this World Cup. In fact, I think I said a few shows ago that Ireland would get to the quarterfinals and no more. They wouldn't even. They're just not a team that gets to past a quarterfinal. They're not good enough. They don't have the depth. A coach that's leaving, and we were chatting earlier. And you have a Joe Schmidt that was just hadn't adapted to a game that had changed. You know, everybody caught up to them, and again, their wins. Ireland got to number one not because of their performance. And many people are going to disagree with this, but it was as much South Africa beating and Australia beating New Zealand over a short period of time in the same period that Ireland beat them, that got Ireland to number one. The Box beat New Zealand, they drew with them, Australia beat them, and that's a bad Australian side. And it's not a well-coached. For all you want to say, I'm glad that Michael Checker has resigned. He did what he needed to do. But nothing's going to change in Australian rugby unless Raelene Castle resigns as well.
Well, she's not going to. She seems to be putting all the story in who comes in to coach, but they've got serious problems.
Yep.
And if you just look at that game, England knew what Australia was going to come out with, and they just had to keep their defensive lines, and they preyed off Australia's mistakes.
Yep.
So the one thing that Australia was never going to be able to do was chase the scoreboard, and they were 12 points down within 5 minutes. Yep. And then you knew it was just going to be an uphill battle. And I just felt I hear what you're saying in terms of the scoreline 40-60 maybe not being an accurate reflection of the first 60 minutes of the game.
Mm.
But I always felt the momentum and control was with England, even though Australia, from a spectator's point of view, visually looked like they were the stronger side, but they were playing helter-skelter and frantic rugger.
Mm.
But like Japan did against us in the first 40, it looks fantastic, but where are they actually going? And I just thought it was, of all the matches, I would say that England, and I know New Zealand played that what they would call the perfect game, but also look at how Ireland didn't front. Australia at least were in the game for periods.
Yes.
I thought England's performance was more than I expect to see in a semi-final or a final, because that kind of New Zealand performance, I think it was once in a generation that a team comes out and plays that kind of faultless footy. And I just can't wait till Saturday, 10 a.m. It's going to be a cracker. And I don't think it would be an upset if the All Blacks win. I don't think it's an upset if England wins. There will be no shock either way, and it's just going to be fantastic for world rugby. And it's strength of Northern Hemisphere against strength of Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, and people are asking me already what's going to happen. You know, let's relax for a second. As a Welshman and a passionate resident of South Africa, yesterday was an emotionally draining day. You want to take the wins when they come and enjoy them, and then start to process the information. And this is what this show is about, is just talking about that. So, I'm not fielding any questions about the games. I haven't even started thinking about them to any depth of analysis. What I would like to say, though, is let's put the New Zealand victory into perspective. They beat Ireland by 24 points. They were great, and maybe Ireland didn't front up in a way, but Japan beat Ireland. Japan beat them by 7 points, or 6 points, I believe. So So when you look at what South Africa did to Japan yesterday, they beat them by 23. And if you'd have had LaRue that had been on form, and he hasn't been on form for the whole tournament, we'll get into that later. If LaRue, we should have beaten them by 40. So you have, let's put it into perspective.
But if you go back to the differential, it's actually 34 points of difference, 46-12, okay, for the All Blacks. So that's 34. Ireland won, lost by 7 against Japan. So 7 from 34 gives you what, around 27, 23 differential. And we played New Zealand, there were 6 points in it. Mm. They would say 4.
That was 10 points in it. We lost by 10.
Oh, by 10. So yeah. And then that gives you 7. So it's so similar to how
it's
these other games
neck.
Have played out. And when it comes to the likes of Wales, South Africa, yeah. England and New Zealand, it's a one-score game.
It's a final. It's going to be a final. So, you know, so let's not...
We'll get there later in the week. But
yeah, we'll get there later in the week. We'll analyze and we'll try and come up with the narrative we think is going to happen. I think I was spot on with the narrative in the South Africa game. You know, I was surrounded by South African fans yesterday, and I am a South African fan. But guys were going crazy. I said, you're winning. We're winning. The last 20 minutes... You can't play at that level of intensity for Japan. They got nothing coming off the bench. The cavalry was always coming for Rassi. He'd staged a good plan, and if not for a few silly mistakes by the box, you know, I felt that the box tried to play a bit of Harlem Globetrotter rugby yesterday. You had Sia Khaleesi back around the back pass, putting it into play around his 22-meter line. You had guys trying to keep the ball alive in situations, almost imitating the Japanese, and there was no need to. You had Willie LaRue that knocked the ball on. And this is my, and Willie LaRue had a shocker yesterday. But it shouldn't surprise anybody because he hasn't had a good game for a while. I don't know why Rassi is persisting with that. Can you maybe give some insight into that?
Look, all I can think of is that he may feel that as the veteran in the back three, he's giving both those wins a lot of comfort. There could be a lot of off-the-ball talking that's going on, positional play. Colby's only into his second season, and Pimper's into his first season. So he could be saying, and he has that strong left foot as well that complements the right foot of Pollard. Mm. So he's making mistakes, and he's kind of making the mistakes that a player out of form, who has played well, tends to do. He's trying too hard. He's overcompensating. You know, that he'd ordinarily make that pass to Peter Steph. It just drifted forward. Then he knocks one on, and because
just drifted forward. I don't think Tom Brady completed a pass last week in the NFL that was more forward.
Well,
than
Well, it also depends on what just is 5 meters. Eh? Yeah. But he also is very emotional on the field when he drops a ball or his face drops. He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
But I think the only reason he'll keep him there, and I don't think he'll make any changes. One in his mind, he's not going to change a winning formula, is because of the experience that he provides.
Yes.
And he has the insurance policy on the bench. Mm-hmm. If it all does go pear-shaped, Frans Steyn is the ultimate sub for them at the moment. He can come on, play 12, play 10, play 15. The days of playing win, I think, are gone.
Yeah.
But he got his mix right, I think, for the game. When we spoke prior to the tournament starting, you also said Ireland wouldn't go past the quarters. And the thing was, Ireland will play the box. And you said the box will smash them. And I think the box would have dealt with them as comfortably.
Yep.
If not necessarily as stylishly as New Zealand did.
Yeah.
When I looked at the Japan thing, we spoke earlier last week and we said 30-point differential. When they last played them was 34 points.
Well, I said 20.
Well, we started with 30.
Well, you started with 30.
And then said the occasion, the emotion, we'll give Japan 10 for that. It will be a 20-plus comfortable victory. 23 points the differential.
Yeah.
Pollard missed 7 points, 2 conversions and a penalty. It takes us into 31. D'Alandi's try should have been given.
Yeah.
He wasn't held in the tackle. But for Willie LaRue not striking with a pass, Peter Steph over. So that's 43 points. We'll take it that Pollard maybe even misses that conversion.
Let's add this though, Mark. Let's add the Wayne Barnes factor.
Well, that would have been 65 points because he refereed one team. That was South Africa in the first 40.
Yeah. And I was looking around. We were at the Roundhouse in Camps Bay. Beautiful venue. I've got paid nothing to say that. It was just spectacular. You know, we were very privileged in this country to be able to watch a rugby game like that with that surrounding, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, and it was just such a great day. But I was looking around, and I was, I don't know if I was watching the same, but everybody was just, you know, the conspiracy theorists started talking after 20 minutes. I was convinced that Wayne Barnes must have an account where he got paid to referee that first 40 minutes for Japan, because there was no, his understanding of the game was so off, and I wonder what was going through his mind.
But you know the criticism in 2007 in the quarterfinal between New Zealand and France, which he refereed, when the forward pass was missed to the try. New Zealand had 200 pickups and go. France made 250 tackles and weren't penalised once.
Yeah.
They were falling all over the ball, coming in from the one side. And his response was, if you get 200 pick-up and goes, you should be good enough to win the game. But he was, the criticism from Graham Henry at the time was, this guy refereed one team, not two.
Yeah.
And in the first 40 minutes, I felt he only refereed South Africa's inaccuracies and let everything go. There was one Japanese movement, I think there were four forward passes.
Yeah.
And the commentator tonight, Matthew Pearce, was saying,
well, he's a guy who's now officially changing his name to Tom Brady.
Yeah. And it's like he was like, that's marginal. It's not marginal. It was forward by a long shot, and no one, the touch judges didn't pick it up.
No.
The Japanese were coming in from the side, scrambling, killing every ball.
Well, especially on that rolling mall. I mean, how many penalties could he have given in that instance?
I don't think I've ever seen a rugby championship game or a Six Nations when the Tier 1 teams up against each other where a team has marched another team 15, 20 metres and the hint of the hand doesn't even come out.
No.
For you're about to obstruct the mall or kind of collapse it. And then
the Dielande try?
The Dielande try. He wouldn't go upstairs. If he had gone upstairs, and we spoke about it before we started the show, we should have got the red card.
But I'm not...
But the Japanese winner on Pimpi, that was one of the most horrendous... No intent to catch the ball, just take the bloke out in the air, and it happened twice to him.
And he took him around the neck.
Around the neck. And then there was the gouge on Colby.
Then there was a try with Dielande, who had a massive game. Big up to him. Wow. What was amazing was the guy was tackled. He wasn't held on the ground. There was a second guy that was involved, but you can't play a guy on the ground. So Wayne Barnes was the only referee not to refer to the TMO in the entire tournament. He had made a decision that he was going to do his style of refereeing, and he was. It was the worst game of refereeing I've ever seen in my life by a country distance, and there was some. It just had me and everybody else watching the game perplexed because
when I watched the group matches. And it's like, how the hell did that bloke just get a yellow or a red for some of those tackles? The high tackles, especially in the close contact, when a flank's running at a flank or a prop's running at a lock, every second tackle was around the neck and into an indirect neck roll.
Mm.
It wasn't even mentioned, wasn't even looked at. There were so many guys ducking under the other bloke, just cleaning him out straight into the head as well.
Mm.
It was a free-for-all in the playoffs, and they let it go. But when Siya Kolisi, which is his right as a captain, says, could you please have a look, because that was an horrendous challenge in the air. And his response was, you guys kick the ball.
What difference does that make?
No, you guys kick the ball. And I just thought there was an arrogance about him in that first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And when Barnes also decides he's not ruling in your favour, we've seen that in the past, it becomes, you've got to be a bloody good side then to win. And it was only when we got to the two scores up that he started actually officiating the scrum and our absolute dominance up front. And I love the comment of one of the French, one of the Japanese players afterwards at the press conference when he was asked, like, how was it? And he said, his direct quote was, they beat the shit out of us.
But I've never seen
that. That was so powerful and so big. And credit to them also, they stuck at it for 80 minutes and they're a very well coached side.
Yeah, and you know what? They've got six, let's not get too carried away with Japan. They're flavor of the month. They've been a great host. I'm not having a go at them, but let's be honest. They've got six Tongans.
Four Kiwis.
Four Kiwis.
Three South Africans.
One Australian. Three Australians. A Samoan.
A Tongan and a South Korean.
I mean, they're not Japanese. There's no. It's not a Japanese team. It's a mercenary team. So let's not. Oh, they're wonderful.
And two New Zealand coaches.
Yeah. So let's put it into perspective. They're flavor of the month. There's been a great tournament. Everybody's caught up in the emotion of it. But the reality is that they had 280 days to train. They weren't involved much in the Super Rugby. You know, they've been targeting this. And where else in the world of sports, you have a World Cup. There's no Uruguay. You've got to be Uruguayan to play on that team. You don't see any English players or French players or, you know, so let's put it into perspective. It's not a Japanese team.
Yeah, they built a team to get to playoffs, yeah. And they did. And hopefully from this, your next generation of local-based players and Japanese-born player will feel that rugby is a sport of choice at school and at varsity level, and they've got something to aspire to. So I think them making the playoffs was massively important for Asian rugby, for Japanese rugby. I see now people are commenting and saying, revisit the Sun Wolves thing, bring them back to Super Rugby.
For God's
nonsense,
sakes.
You know? Yeah. You put that Sun Wolves side back in, they'll take 50 points every time.
Well, what is the reluctance of the IRB to wake up and put and host a World Cup in America, North America? I mean, it's about time, because the future of rugby is not in Asia. You're not going to get Chinese guys playing rugby, you know, and it's... I mean, let's get back to Wayne Barnstack, because yesterday, I've only swore in front of my son, who's 9 now, once in my life. Yesterday was the second time. And after he didn't call that high tackle, everybody around the table was just looking and waiting for the you know, him to do the square thing and say, you know, we'll go. And his arrogance, like you say, this thing, it was the second time I swore in front of my son, and I spelt it out. To the people, someone said, "Where's he from?" I said, "He's English." And me being Welsh, you know, I just said, "He's a you know," and so I spelt it out. My son came up to me on the lawn when I was trying to calm down after the game, and he said, "Dad, why do you spell when you know I can spell?"
W-A-Y-N-E.
Exactly.
But yeah, I just felt that, and again, that's the one thing that's always quiet from World Rugby is, had that been England against whoever, another referee, and that tackle was missed, and it was decisive, we wouldn't have heard the end of it. So, and funnily enough, there's been nothing about Barnes' performance post the game, and the only one who they're talking about is Jaco Paper, because he posed with a few cheerful, joyful, and possibly...
Well, the Welsh are charming, aren't they?
Yes.
Except for me. And so he takes a picture, and now they want to have an investigation. Grow up, IRB. I mean, come on. This is, you guys need to really get a wake up in terms of your investigations and your priorities.
But it's interesting now when you look at the playoffs, and we're talking about referees.
Is Wayne Barnes going to get a semi-final or a final?
Well, if England are there, he can't, because he's English. Yeah. So, you know who comes right back into the fray again?
Oh, God, don't say it.
The French referees. So by default, they're there, because if it's Wales and, well, Nigel Owens can't get the Welsh game because Wales are playing. So if Wales go through the final, he's out. If England go to the final, Barnes is out. If South Africa go through, Paper is out. So what's left? Some crappy Australian referees.
Well, there's no Scottish referee.
An indifferent New Zealand referee, and the two French guys again.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy. Yeah.
So prepare for a, and I reckon if it's a South Africa England final, and Garcias gets it, can you imagine the madness of that breakdown? Because everything goes.
Oh. Well, we're going to take a couple of days to enjoy it, and it's very tempting to get back into analyzing, but we're going to take South Africa, enjoy the victory. Yeah. You know, it was a great plan by Rassie, executed well. And, you know, we're going to back Willie LaRue. It sounds like Rassie is, so, okay, I'm going to get behind him. And let's just be positive and celebrate it. We're going to kill Wales. I'm going to tell you why you're going to beat Wales this week in my next show. I guarantee you're going to beat them. There's no way Wales are winning. You're going to disagree with me, but I'm going to tell you why. But, wait for it for a couple of days. And let's enjoy, as a Welshman, we got lucky. I'm enjoying the Welsh victory and the fact that we're in the Final Four. I suggest you guys do as well. Just bring a bit of humility to this week about your victory, about your comments and that. So let's enjoy what we've done. And we'll see you in a few days with another video, if you want to watch. Anyway, thanks, Mark.
Thanks, sir. Over the top it goes. Creel kicks ahead. And the race is on.